Any questions before we get started? Related to this week's homework, there's one correction I wanted to make from the remote lecture. When I was going over the solution to this active clamp flyback, I was running long on the lecture and I derived the alpha current by averaging in the time domain and then just wrote the solution when it's normalized over into state plane notation. And I missed a 1/2 on theta 6 here. This should be a different color. Theta 6 over 2. That's because it comes from this IM plus I5 over 2 times T6. When I normalize that, I get a half of it here with JM and half of it here with J5. So there's a missing factor of 1/2 right there. Okay. That's going to be necessary to include in this week's homework if you're working off the lecture notes and not re-deriving yourself. This week's homework, what I ask you to do is compare the performance of the active clamp to the performance of just a quasi-square wave flyback, which would be taking the approach we've looked at for the buck and boost converter and applying it to the flyback, where I just reduce the magnetizing inductance enough so that my current in the magnetizing inductance, rather than being DC constant, and now has 100% ripple, and I get soft switching that way. To prep you on it, you're going to be solving the state plane for each, leveraging as much as you want of the notes on the active clamp flyback and having to solve it completely for the quasi square wave flyback. And you're going to end up with these systems of state plane equations. Okay? And like I mentioned in class, oftentimes it's not possible to get a closed form solution for what the output current is in terms of, you know, some single variable to just solve for what does everything need to be to give me an output power of 60 watts in the homework. Okay? And that's because you have the system of equation that combines trigonometric functions and polynomials. You can't directly find the inverse of that system. Okay? So what I recommend you do is pick a variable to start with. For the active clamp flyback, JM works well. And just make a guess at what you think the magnetizing current should be. Once you guess that first variable, you can find a pathway through all of the equations that let you solve, okay, from IM, I can solve I1. With IM and I1, I can solve theta 1. With those, I can solve theta 2 and work your way through. And at the end, you'll solve this, knowing all these parameters, and you'll get that the output current was 4, I needed 5, so I'm going to go back and increase my guess for IM. If you're working in MATLAB, you can do that a little bit more programmatically. But it may be harder than necessary to try to directly solve this when you can just iterate through rather simply. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. But I do want you guys to get some experience with actually going through and using these state plane equations to solve back for waveforms. Okay. All right. With that correction in mind, we're going to move on. Last time we were introducing this class of AC link topology, which consisted of really an inverter, some passive network, and a rectifier, where in this passive network we have fully AC waveforms. And all elements in there are going to be AC elements. We don't have any big filter elements like we do in our PWM converters, things that are meant to just filter out all ripple. Instead, they are having full AC waveforms either resonating near or at the switching frequency. The first converter we looked at in this class is known as the dual active bridge, perhaps one of the simplest full AC link waveforms with isolation as far as its operation. And we looked at waveforms for this dual active bridge. First, just kind of the ideal waveforms neglecting switching transitions, but including the effect of this leakage inductance. And then at the end of class, we jumped in and had waveforms with switching transitions under some assumption on wave shape. So VG much greater than V for the way I've drawn the waveforms, making my subinterval 3 very short, my subinterval 1 a little bit longer, because that's on the switching transition on the high voltage side. Because of the symmetry of these waveforms, we can understand all about the converter operation by just looking at the first 4 subintervals and then extending our analysis for the remaining 4. And at the end of class, we went through each of these 4 and sketched what our equivalent circuit would look like. And where I want to pick up is now going on and from these waveforms and circuits, plotting the state plane of the converter. Okay. I have 2 axes here. Make your guesses as to why. We'll get to that in a moment. But I'm going to start out by looking at the primary side. I'm going to look at M sub P and J sub L, where M sub P is normalized VP, J sub L is normalized IL. So I'm really looking at what's going to be the resonance between CP and the leakage inductance, and then the 3 linear subintervals. Okay. So I'm going to choose V base is VG, and R naught is going to be root LL over CP. So starting from this first subinterval, my first subinterval is my resonance subinterval. I'm going to begin on the state plane plot at really this time here. And prior to this interval starting, what I have is on VP, I have a voltage of negative VG, negative of the input voltage. And on IL, I have the negative peak current, which I call I peak. I'm starting with IL here at negative I peak, and VP here at negative VG. On my state plane, that's going to be some point down here at minus J peak and minus 1, according to my normalization. V base is VG. Okay. And the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to resonate. So I want to find the center of this resonance. So looking at this top equivalent circuit, what is my DC operating point for that resonance? An IL. So I have no current sources in it. I could resketch this whole thing as color here. CP LL V out over N. If I just reflect back through the transformer, here I've kept VP and IL. I haven't altered any of my waveforms of interest. I include my DC operating point is 0 current in the inductor and the capacitor voltage equal to that DC voltage, which is minus V out over N. Now, for the mode of operation that I'm considering, I'm looking at V out is equal to NVG. So when I designed this, I wanted to let that transformer do all of my voltage conversion. My conversion ratio is equal to the turns ratio. So in this specific case, this isn't a constraint of the DAB, but this is one way I could design it. Then V out over N is VG. So my DC operating point is minus VG zero, and it's that right there, my subinterval one DC operating point. Right. So then my resonance, this is my DC operating point, this is my initial condition. So my radius is going to be this. And which direction am I going to go? Figure out direction based on the initial conditions on my first derivative. Initially, my inductor current is its largest negative value, meaning initially that inductor current is going to be flowing back into the capacitor and it's going to increase VP, right? I'm going to resonate in the direction that increases the voltage on the capacitor, which is going to be this way. Okay. And if I've designed it right and I'm happy, that resonance is going to continue and it's going to take VP from negative VG all the way up to positive VG, which is going to then allow me to turn on my FET zero voltage switching. Okay. So I would like that resonance to carry me from minus one all the way up here to plus one. If I hit that plus one, that's when I can turn on my FETs and end this subinterval one. Radii are markedly not equal in length, but I'll ask you to pretend. I'm going to call this angle alpha and my radius R1. After that, I'm going to transition into subinterval 2. Subinterval 2, really 2, 3, and 4, my voltage on VP is not going to change. It's locked at 1. MP is 1. Up with the inductor current, during subinterval 2 and 3, it increases, and then it locks in subinterval 4. So on my state plane, this is going to look like some increase in subinterval 2, a smaller increase in subinterval 3, and then subinterval 4 is just going to be this point here where I have my current locked at its most positive value, J peak, and I gave these some names, I1 and I2, which when normalized would be J1 and J2. Okay. So that's really my complete half period. And if I wanted to sketch a full period of this converter, it would just be symmetric around the second half. I'd have the same kind of R1, R1, alpha, same current over on the left-hand side. Okay. So what's missing? Well, I don't have anything in here about really the secondary side resonant transition, right? Because I was looking at the primary side, and the voltage on the primary didn't change as I switched the secondary bridge, just showed up as this small linear interval, subinterval 3. So if I want to know what's going on with this subinterval 3 where the secondary is obtaining VVS, I need to add some more information. The way I'm going to do that is I'm going to plot a second state plane where I'm, instead of looking at VP and IL, I'm going to look at VS and IL, or reflected over, call this IS. And IS is just IL over N. So as I do this, what I need to be careful of is, in order to look at this second resonance, I'm going to have to normalize differently. Now I'm looking at some different capacitance, the secondary side capacitance, and it's resonating with the reflected inductor. So I'm going to change my normalization scheme. Since I'm over on the secondary, I'm going to change V base. And I'm going to call it V base prime. I'm going to try to stick with these primes as just denoting, okay, this is my second normalization. Okay. I'm going to make this V out. And my RO prime is going to look like N squared LL over CS. I'm reflecting everything over to the secondary as I pull the leakage inductor through the transformer. Going to go with N squared. Okay. And then on my state plane, I'm going to plot the MS JS state plane. Okay. With me so far? Okay. So I'm going to look through these same four subintervals. So I'm going to start at the same point where I have minus I peak in the inductor, and I have minus V out for my VS voltage. What that's going to give me, because I'm normalizing with V base prime, is V out will still be at minus one. And then I'm going to be at some negative current down here. I'm going to call minus J peak prime, which is the same current, but now reflected to the secondary and normalized through a different I base, different V base divided by R naught. Okay. So notationally, same thing, but the normalization I used to get there is different. And I'm going to use these primes because if I ever want to back out and get back to my time domain waveforms once I solve this, I need to remember to denormalize according to these values, not these. So that's my start. Now what happens, I've got a similar situation here where through subinterval 1 and 2, my voltage is going to remain locked while my current begins increasing. And then subinterval 3 will actually be my resonant interval on this side. So what that's going to look like here is I'm going to have subinterval 1, my current increases without any change in the voltage. Subinterval 2, I get a larger change in current, but still no change in voltage. And then subinterval 3 is my actual resonant subinterval. My initial condition is going to be something here where I start at J2 prime. This here is minus J1 prime. I need to look back at my circuit and figure out what my DC operating point is for this resonance, and it's what? V out on the capacitor, VG reflected through, which again, based on my assumption that V out is NVG, my DC operating point is right here, that a positive V out, which normalizes the one, and zero current. We still have no current source in there. That means that I have a radius R2, and I'm going to resonate like this. I'm going to call this delta. How did I know I resonated that way? Well, I could do the same thing. I could go look at the initial conditions of derivatives. The other thing is I can kind of argue with myself. I could never go that way. I can never go below V out because I've got a full bridge, a diode, a clamp. It's resonating. It's got to go that way. My waveforms to work. This is now takes me up to subinterval 4, which again is just a single point here because neither voltage or current are changing. And I can again sketch the second half of the period just by repeating these anti-symmetric waveforms. Okay. These two state planes look very similar. The important thing to note here is that in one, I'm going counterclockwise. In one, I'm going clockwise. So they're traversed in different directions, which makes some sense from the primary capacitor current. From the primary capacitor's perspective, the current is one direction. From the secondary capacitor's perspective, the current is the other direction. They're both looking at that same inductor current, right? What this is going to lead to is differences in my ZVS constraint, the one I want to look at next. So I will have ZVS conditions on both the primary and secondary in general, and I'd like to soft switch, get ZVS on all eight devices. Looking at the primary, what is my ZVS condition? In order to get ZVS, I need this subinterval 1 to carry me all the way from negative 1 up to 1, and move my voltage from minus VG up to positive VG so I can soft switch my bridge. So from this state plane, what is that ZVS condition? Exactly. So I need R1 to be greater than 2, but as I resonate around, I'm going to reach this distance, and that R1 is equal to J peak from the start of the interval. So I need R1, which is equal to J peak, to be greater than 2. Okay, let's denormalize this to see what it's telling me. So to denormalize, I will multiply both sides by I base. That's going to give me J peak is, I don't even need to multiply, I'm just going to write it out. J peak is I peak over I base, which is I peak over VG times R naught. Since this is my primary side resonance, I'm using my primary side normalization. That's greater than 2. And I can manipulate this a little bit. I'm going to multiply the VG over to the right, and I'm going to take the 1 over root C over to the right. This is going to become I peak square root of LL greater than 2 VG root CP. If I square the whole thing and just for fun multiply by a half, I'll get 1 half LL I peak squared greater than 1/2 Cp to Vg squared. This is telling me that the energy stored in my leakage inductor at the start of this resonance needs to be greater than the capacitor energy required to move me from minus Vg to plus Vg, or 2 Vg difference. Okay. So a key factor in designing this dual active bridge is, how do I select this leakage inductance? So I want to look at this equation. What is this telling me? To get VVF, I'm going to need a peak current large enough to satisfy this, right? And if LL is small, that's going to mean I need a very high peak current. And then for my waveforms, that peak current really is dictating my power. So it's going to tell me that I need to go up to a high power in order to achieve VVF. Okay. If I make LL very large, I can reduce this peak current, and then at low power, I can still maintain VVF. So, telling me that I will lose VVF for light load operation. I want some very small current flowing to the output. I'm going to need a very small I peak, and at some point, somewhere between full power and zero power, this is no longer going to be satisfied, regardless of how I design everything. Okay. And it's telling me that I want a large LL so that ZVS range is, let's just say, most of the output power range. Basically, look at my output power, got some maximum that I designed this for, it goes down to zero somewhere in here. According to my choice of LL, I'm going to have my non-ZVS range and my ZVS range. I'm going to divide, and I'm going to have some power that I can solve for, which below this output power, I'm going to start hard switching. Okay? And a very small LL that might be here. Very large LL might be down here. Okay. We'll come back to that in a moment. Let's look at the secondary side. CVS condition. My secondary, I drew emphasis to, I'm resonating in the opposite direction. What's the ZVS condition on the secondary? J2 prime? Greater than 2? Head scratcher, right? It actually is none. There's no ZVS condition. For this mode of operation, I always get ZVS. And that's because this is not a transfer of energy from the inductor to that capacitor. I'm transferring energy and trying to span this full range. The transfer of energy from the capacitor back to the inductor. And in this resonance, those capacitors will always dump all their energy back to the inductor and span the full range. So There is no ZVS condition for this mode of operation. And why I emphasize that is for the waveforms as drawn, I can always get ZVS. However, doing so at the extreme boundary, I could start at zero current here. I could have J2 prime as zero, and I could still resonate all the way up. But what that would do is it would dictate what my J peak prime is. So if J2 prime was zero, then I'd have a radius of 2, and I go up to J peak prime is equal to 2. And that's going to kind of dictate what my output power is, right? So if I'm trying to operate at an output power below that, that's going to be problematic. I may have to start thinking about shifting into a different mode of operation, basically intentionally hard switching, even though I could have soft switched. If I do, my output power is going to be too high. And I may have to change my mode of operation. But as long as I can stick with modulation schemes and operating waveforms that look like is described here, I don't have to worry about the secondary. I always can get ZVS. So let's go through and now repeating these state planes here, sketch a little bit nicer. Let's go through and solve the state plane. And now we've got this new thing thrown in with the two different state planes, two different normalizations. The state plane solution is going to look really similar to things we've worked with before. So I'll go through by subinterval first. Subinterval 1, primary side resonance. I'll be looking at this section or this section. It doesn't really matter. Same subinterval of the primary side state plane. I'm going to get two equations, one for the radius. So this is R1 and this is R1. It tells me that R1 is equal to J peak. You guys already noted when we did the ZVS condition, and that's also equal to looking at this triangle here, get rid of my R1. It has a height of J1, a width of 2, and a radius of R1, which is J peak. So this is equal to root J peak squared is equal to the square root of J1 squared plus 4. Can I do Pythagorean theorem? And then a second equation for alpha. And alpha, with all three sides of this triangle known, I could choose my favorite trig identity. I like arcsine. Let's say this is the arcsine of 2 over J peak. Okay. Subinterval 2 is going to be my linear subinterval. I'm going to have to pull in information from outside the state plane to solve this. So I hop back to my time domain waveforms. Subinterval 2, what I've got is a ramping of this leakage inductor current. It has a voltage across it, a VG, plus the reflected output voltage, which because V is equal to NVG, looks like 2VG applied across the leakage inductance. So I'm going to slope here, 2VG over LL. And over the duration of subinterval 2, that carries me from a current of minus I1 up to a current of I2. Did I write my equations? I have is 2VG over LL times T2 is equal to I1 plus I2. Okay. And then I'm going to normalize this. I'm going to divide both sides by I base. This is going to look like left J1 plus J2. On the right, excuse me. On the left, I divide by I base. My VG is going to cancel. I'm going to get an R naught over LL, which becomes an omega naught times T2. This is going to be 2 times what I've called theta 2 in the past. I'm going to call it beta here. And for no reason other than I already had some figures that called it beta coming up. Okay. So it's just a purely notational thing. Beta 2, beta, the exact same thing. Subinterval 3 is now my switching subinterval over on the secondary. I'm going to again get 2 equations for it. I'm going to look at a triangle here that has height J2 prime, width 2, radius J peak prime. When I look at my solution, it's really going to look a lot like subinterval 1. My R2 is equal to J peak prime, equal to the root of J2 prime plus 4. My delta is arc sine of 2 over JP prime. Subinterval 4, I get nothing. All right, subinterval 4, I just sit here. Constant voltage, constant current through the entire subinterval. The way that I'm going to get some information about the length of that subinterval is by looking at my complete period. So here I'm going to write an equation. My half period is T1 plus T2 plus T3 plus T4. As I normalize that, what I'm going to do is multiply my T's by omega naught. Multiply both sides of the equation by an omega naught. What I'm going to get is 2 pi f naught over 2 fs is equal to alpha plus theta plus delta. And then I'm going to use zeta for theta 4. Again, purely just a notational thing. So this thing over here on the left, my 2's will cancel. And this will end up looking like pi over my capital F. Okay. Any questions so far? Am I boring you guys? Everybody seems pretty low energy today. I don't know why everybody's not more excited. It's DAB. Remember last lecture? This thing is soft switching. It's got near minimum current stresses. It's like the ultimate converter. Like everybody to be hooting and hollering every step of this derivation. Man, this thing is amazing. Think of all the voltages I can convert with this. Okay, well, to each his own. Yeah.
So, bridging these steps, when you drive from, they can't go over this. All right, I'll watch it again.
What was the question, I'm sorry. I think Florida won, right?
The primary and secondary state plans are both on the screen.
So what the state plans are really useful for is analyzing the resonant intervals, right? And here, the nice thing that my primary resonance only shows up in this state plane. So for subinterval 1, I really only had to look here. My secondary resonance, subinterval 3, only shows up in the secondary state plane. I only had to look here. Subinterval 2 is this linear subinterval where I had to go back to the time domain plot. And I could have, so I took I1, I2, 2VG over LL, that was all looking at the primary. So I normalized it into my primary normalization without any primes. But I could have written the same thing over on the secondary. I'd have ends on everything to reflect it over to the secondary and then normalize with V base prime and R naught prime. And I could have that equation in my secondary notation if I wanted. Save myself writing 4 primes. Right. And that's an important thing, is that it's completely time separated. I have my primary resonance, then this ramping interval, then my secondary resonance. If I had the two overlap, which is something that can happen, which is basically to say this T2 becomes less than zero, then my two resonances would overlap, and I would have an interval where I've got my primary side capacitance and my secondary side capacitance in circuit. That now is a resonance which is not described by either of my normalizations. I'd have to look at having a third state plane for the resonance when I have CP really in series with CS in this resonance. But it would still be, since they're directly in series, so it would be a single element resonance. My values are just changing, so my normalization would have to change. Okay. While we're here and talking about additional elements, let me make a side note. This transformer will have some magnetizing inductance, LM, right? And we've been looking at this a lot in the flyback. Flyback is somewhat unique in that its transformer is not meant to be an ideal transformer. It's an energy storage element. Here, this is meant to be an ideal transformer. So this will be an ungapped core. LM will be as large as we can make it. And because LM is very large, much larger than LL, its role in this resonance in any of the waveforms in the zero volt switching behavior is going to be minimal. So we're designing LM much greater than LL, an ungapped transformer. And then what will happen is, kind of, if I reflect this LM through, see that VF applied directly across it. So when I look at my waveforms, VS down here at the bottom will be directly applied across that LM. So I'll end up with some magnetizing current. Looks like a triangle wave like this. And because it's so much larger of a value, LM is compared to LL, if I include it in any of these intervals, it's going to look more like a current source, okay? Similar to what we did in the flyback when we were considering the leakage inductance. So if I put it in this circuit in subintervals 1, 2, and 4, it's going to have a voltage applied directly across it. It's not going to be resonating at all. It's only here in subinterval 3 where that magnetizing inductance would just have a capacitance in parallel. Even if I did include it, since it's such a large value compared to LL, I'd include it as a current source with value IM peak. Okay. If I don't, then I have a true, if I wanted to actually analyze this circuit where LM was comparable in value to LL, I'd have a true multi-resonant circuit. State plane would fall apart. Okay. It would result in some multi-frequency kind of circles drawn on top of circles thing going on. State plane's not going to be very helpful. It's going to look like a spirograph, perhaps, depending on the relative frequencies of the two. But most likely, during this interval, so it's subinterval 3 or 7, there's not much change in that magnetizing inductor current, so I can approximate it pretty well as just a current source. Okay. So for the moment, we're just going to neglect it, assuming it's large enough that this value is very small. Does that all make sense? Okay. So last thing I have is my averaging step. I've gone through and written my solutions for each subinterval. So now what I want to do is average the output current. My only filter passive in this converter is what would be some output capacitance to hold my output voltage. So in order to apply cap charge balance on that, what I'm going to do is average the output current. So I've sketched a plot of the output current here. What you notice is that I out looks like plus or minus IL, and I've reflected through the transformer. So I out, what was my turns ratio? I out is IL over N. Looks like just the inductor current reflected through and then rectified according to which state the secondary bridge is in. Secondary bridge is connected positive, it's the positive inductor current. Secondary bridge is negative, it's the negative of the inductor current. It gives me this kind of waveform. The only exception is step in 3. In subinterval 3, the output voltage is no longer connected to the circuit. Here, all the inductor current goes, runs through the output capacitance of the devices. None of it makes it over to the output voltage. So the output current is 0 during this subinterval. So I'm going to take my plot here. That this looks just like the inductor current. What I'm going to do is instead of averaging the output, I'm going to average N times the output current over half a switching period equal to 2 over TS, the integral from 0 to TS over 2 of the output current times N dt. And that's going to be in subintervals 1, 2, and 4, that's going to be equal to the inductor current. So I can just average the inductor current and skip subinterval 3. So my N times, that is capital I out, is going to be 2 over TS times charge in each of the 4 subintervals. So subinterval 1, 2, 3, 4. Subinterval 1 is my primary side resonance. Use my same trick. The average inductor current during the interval where it all flows through that primary side capacitance that charge is going to be equal to whatever charge went into the capacitor, which is capacitance times my delta V, which was 2VG. So the charge that it took to move this voltage from minus VG to plus VG on CP, my primary side capacitor. Sub interval 2, I have this ramping from minus I1 to I2. So my Q2 is going to look like 2 minus I1 over 2 times T2. My Q3, like we just argued, is 0 because I have no charge making it through to the output. This is when I'm averaging the output current. If I wanted to know some characteristics of my inductor current or my input current, we would have something going on during subinterval 3. So we have no current going through the output. Subinterval 4, I just have I peak delivered over the entire duration of the subinterval. So that is my average output current. Again, going to normalize by dividing through by I base. I'll normalize with my primary notation. So I'm going to call this J N I out over I base. It's going to look like 2 over TS minus 2 FS times CP 2 VG over V base times R naught plus on the rest of these. I can just apply my normalization directly, J2 minus J1 over 2, T2 plus JP T4. And then as we've done in every case, what I'm going to do is multiply this whole thing by omega naught over omega naught. I'm going to take the numerator and distribute it through, and I'm going to bring the denominator back here. Going to look like J is equal to 2FS over 2 pi F naught times VGs will cancel. R naught times omega naught is 1 over CP. So I'll just get 2 plus J2 minus J1 over 2 times beta plus J peak times zeta. Bad box. Okay. We'll pick up there on Wednesday.